Hello and welcome back to the I'll Listen podcast. Today we are speaking with Allison Ambassador and fundraiser Kim Taster. Kim will be known by a lot of you after his 24-hour kayaking challenge and has some incredible stories around that fundraising challenge, as well as delving into other things in all-round life that can hopefully add a lot of value and a lot of learning to a lot of different people. He is as Manxly come, born and bred in, you know, in the wild of the Isle of Man, adventurous experiences. And yeah, generally very interesting guy, and I hope you all enjoy the conversation. Here we are, Kim Taster. Cool, we're on.
Perfect.
So, Kim, a lot of people through our list and all know you or have heard of you already. So, let's chat to us a little bit about the kayak. So, for those that didn't know, Kim did a fundraising event for our listen where he essentially kayaked for 24 hours continuously. Pretty much. Didn't get out of his kayak at all for a whole 24 hours. And yeah, had a bit of a rough time really, didn't you, Kim?
I certainly did.
But raised a lot of money. So yeah, chat to us a little bit about that. And yeah, we'll sort of go from there.
So yeah, the whole idea of the 24-hour challenge was to try and simulate a challenge that's going to be mentally and physically challenging. I think I surpassed my expectations on creating that challenge. The weather forecast was somewhat not ideal. It was only forecasted to go up to about 16 mile an hour for 2 hours over about midnight, and then drop down to not very much again. But in reality, by midnight it was gusting like 40 mile an hour, and didn't really drop below 30 mile an hour the whole 24 hours.
Yeah. So one of my favourite stories from the 24 hours is, because obviously I'm well acquainted with Sam, one of your support support drivers, but support people coming around with you through the day and night, and there was a point round
Langness.
Talk us through that, because people will love to hear stuff like that.
So around Langness, we it was quite a big following sea, so you had a meter or so of swell, maybe 2 meters of swell going against the tide, with the wind also against the tide. So coming into Langness is quite gnarly in the daylight. Not ideal at night time, and less than ideal with a not very good head touch. About a third of the way, maybe halfway around Langness, my head touch decided it ran out of batteries, or it got wet, one of the two, because I was taking quite a lot of waves over myself as well.
And what time in the morning is this? Or night?
This is probably 1:30, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning. So cloudy, rainy.
It was pretty dark.
Absolutely no light whatsoever, and trying to navigate around some pretty treacherous waters.
Yeah,
that's lots of rock, lots of tide, lots of waves. Yeah. So not ideal.
You mean you're in it for a physical and mental challenge, but was that sort of slightly further than what you expected, or were you kind of in hindsight, are you quite happy with that experience? Is it something you want again, or?
If I had any idea what the weather was going to be like, I probably would have postponed again. I don't think I would have put myself in quite as deep as I got myself. It was, in hindsight, it was definitely a challenge. It's quite nice to know how far you can go and what you can physically do, mentally and physically.
If you need to.
If you have to.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I hadn't committed myself early on, I probably would have, there's several points I didn't want to continue, but once you've started, you can't really stop.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? Sort of, you just kind of got to plug away, but you did, and you got round.
Almost.
Well, you got round the 24 hours.
Yeah,
you got
24
round the,
hours.
Got round the clock.
Yeah.
Which was what you set out to do, regardless of conditions, which is pretty epic. So, you didn't just jump in a kayak and do this.
No.
You've got a bit of a background in this sort of thing. So, just to advise anyone else out there, don't do this unless you're a bit of a pro like Kim is. So, you actually, your family run adventurous experiences.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about that, sort of growing up at adventurous experiences, and you know your kind of childhood and how you got to this sort of position now.
I guess I've been with adventure experiences professionally as a coach for about eight and a bit years, and then I did probably 4 maybe 5 years before that as a hobby. And then probably a few years before that, it was just like one of those irritating little kids that was just always lingering around. So yeah, I've been with Venture Experiences for majority of their journey, but we've been going for, I think it's 15 or 16 years now.
Ace, that's so cool. But the way I imagine it is just being incredibly, or just having the potential to be outdoors so often, especially if this is like a family business that you've grown up with. I can just imagine, like, the way I picture it is just being exposed to being able to go in the sea, coast here and kayaking, just being outdoors continually. Like, that's how I kind of picture you growing up from kind of like 6 or 7 through to, you know, through school and even to what you are now. Like, I see that as something that's kind of shaped the way you are.
It certainly has, yeah. So pretty much even younger than that, I was doing outdoor activities, but anything outdoor adventure related was definitely my cup of tea from quite an early age. It was certainly something to fall back onto and it was a challenge.
Yeah, I mean,
it's quite
not,
grounding.
It's not a typical childhood, though.
No.
Realistically, especially in, you know, 21st century life now, like, some kids are lucky to be able to go out and play in an estate freely, let alone free rein over a, you know, something like that.
I guess it's what you get used to when you are growing up, but I took it for quite a lot of time granted, but yeah, I'd say, looking back at it now, very lucky the childhood I did have.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So this is another coincidence. So our first 3 podcast guests were all from QE2. 4th had a little bit of a break with having Dan in now. You've got you in at number 5, another ex-QE2 pupil.
Yeah,
another
certainly.
Of our pilot school this year, which is a pure coincidence, but yeah, it kind of fits pretty well. Talk us through, you know, going through school and to uni and not to uni and how, you know, just your little journey as a person.
I started off at St. John's Primary School. Pretty average class. It was quite a good school at the time.
Mm-hmm. That's a bit of a dig there. We could cut that one out.
it was leading the way when we were there. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's other schools have caught up to its standards, we'll say. Obviously, being named Kim was not the easiest time through primary school or secondary school, but we'll shove that one to the side. On to QE2. That was good. Just an average experience. School's a funny one. It's not a very... I wouldn't say it's a friendly environment. I'd say it's easiest if you don't stick out and you're an average being, which none of us are average.
No.
It's just we all like to put on a little face of being ordinary to try and take less of a hammering.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I'm sure we can touch back to that in a little while. Yeah, just fitting in, trying not to expose yourself in any way. But you're not necessarily ended up like that now.
No.
So, yeah, obviously things do change. Then from QE2, was it back into adventurous experiences then?
I quite fancy the idea of going to uni, but there wasn't a course which I could see a career that I fancied at the time. So I didn't want to go to uni just for the sake of going to uni and going to get smashed for 3 years and then come back and go, what am I going to do with my life now?
Yeah,
right. Thought I'd get some like actual experience in something I enjoy.
No, I love that. So yeah, I was in a similar position really, not feeling like I should go to uni because it's what people push in my way.
Exactly.
But realistically, there was no natural progression from any degree that I was interested in into a career. Like, nothing was vocational, which is quite a difficult thing to manage, especially when you hit... Did you do A-levels?
Yeah, I did A-levels.
Yeah, so from A-levels, then you're sort of thinking it's the same sort of process that people go through after uni. It's just like, right, what now?
I think you're definitely pushed towards A-levels. And then certainly towards uni.
Mm-hmm. So adventure experiences, and then you spent a bit of time traveling as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Australia for 8 months. That was lots and lots of experiences. More than anything, is actually living and breathing a different community. It was quite nice. They've got one hell of a lifestyle out there.
Yeah, for sure. What did you actually do out there? Was there anything specific that you did out there, or
not hugely? We did a little bit of work and a bit of travelling. Did most of the East Coast and then down to Tasmania. But
yeah. And now, what some people might not have put together, you'd hope they have done, but maybe not, is through, I think it was actually before you went to Australia, I Choose Life clothing came together, which, would I be right in saying you're one of the founders?
Yeah.
Is it the best way to put it, yeah? Let's chat a little bit about that, because that sort of ties in pretty well, to be honest, to the messages I'll listen spread. One of my favourite quotes from the website that made me want to engage with I Choose Life on a different level was, "I choose life, including everything positive and negative that comes with it." And that, to me, is just like the most powerful thing.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Because it's learning to come to terms with and accept that you're going to have highs and you're going to have lows, and that is like a perfectly natural thing to happen. And sad times aren't necessarily bad, it's just
dealing with them
in the correct way and having positive coping mechanisms and, yeah, trying to move forward from those sort of things. So, yeah, just let's chat about that.
I'm sure you won't mind, but Sam and myself both had times where we've struggled mentally. I'm not so sure if Tom has. I'm sure he's had his difficulties, but
everyone has. Yeah.
But Sam came to me with the idea that he wanted to get a little team together to create a ethical clothing line that would give 50% of its profits back to a charity of its choice at the time, which is now Isle of Listen. But yeah, like you said, the whole idea of I Choose Life was to take all aspects of life, a bit like a wave. So you have your highs, you're gonna have your lows. There's gonna be good days, there's gonna be more challenging days, and just take everything as it is. It how you tackle those challenges makes a big part of your perspective on it.
Absolutely, yeah. And one of the big messages we spread through some of our training courses is that people expect themselves, or people's perception of how they should feel, is either up or like really happy or sad.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in between. And actually there's this huge sort of
spectrum in between.
Huge spectrum, but also this huge grey area of just okay. Not happy, not sad, just okay. And then when people sit in this area, they think they're sad and they think they can often be worse, and it's just life, a lot of it. And yeah, and learning to sort of come to terms with that, and it's something difficult in itself, and then that ties even further into social media and the rest of it.
Yeah. No, there's a few good quotes on there, and but we wanted to kind of promote getting out there, having experiences, embracing your challenges, questioning stuff. Don't just settle with an answer, but don't be afraid to go, but why do I feel like this, or why are they doing this, why am I feeling like this, any of the above.
Learning about yourself,
completely,
reflecting and trying to, I suppose, develop that level of self-awareness is one of my favourite phrases and big buzzword we keep using. Self-awareness in it's hard in the present moment, but in hindsight it's a lot easier, to be fair.
In hindsight, everything's easier, yeah. But yeah, no, it is purely trying to promote getting out there, doing stuff you find enjoyable, whether it is playing, doing a sport, whatever it is you enjoy, in a different lifestyle. Yeah. To what people may be doing.
Yeah. So through all that experience, through, growing up, at adventurous experiences, I assume, this is me being a touch naive, that one of your main ways of coping with this sort of thing, be it any kind of adversity, any kind of trouble, is through nature and the things such as your kayaking.
An awful lot of sea-related activities.
Sea-related activities is a good, nice way of putting it.
Yeah. I think on the Isle of Man, we're quite lucky in the sense that as soon as you've gone 15 minutes anywhere, you're in the wild, you're in some nice hills or on a beach in a glen. So you can escape from reality quite easily, and you can, it is a coping mechanism. Whether or not it's running from it or actually dealing with it in the situation you're there. But yeah, definitely anything to do with the sea I find quite relaxing.
Yeah, that's the same for me. I found that when I'd been going through a period of difficulty, I was drawn to home, but secondly to particularly just to being outside, and even just being around the sea, beaches, any kind of scenery like that just seemed to put me at ease. And then, later down the line, develop my understanding of this sort of thing, and then that is one of the first things that people are advised to do, is literally get outside, just expose yourself to nature in any sense, and it's supposed to, you know, alleviate so many of these stresses and pressures, and it seems like that, yeah.
That is pretty much the quote of the majority of people that come out of kayaking is, I didn't realise it's going to be so relaxing. Straight away, almost every time. Once they've stopped wobbling and started getting on with actual paddling, everyone is like, wow. They just don't appreciate it, especially if you're not used to that sort of thing.
Yeah, not quite relaxing when you're halfway around Langness.
No.
In the pitch black half one in the morning.
Not a relaxing experience whatsoever,
yeah,
no.
But, yeah, you won't, that will happen to you if you head up to Avengers Experiences. I'll tell you that. I'm sure it is a slightly more pleasurable experience. I think that's the idea anyway, isn't it?
It certainly is. We wouldn't be taking clients out in that, no. That wind was something else.
Yeah. So, one thing that we've been really consistent in asking our guests is, what sort of advice you'd give yourself at 15 years old? And it's such an intricate question, and there's so much you can go into from it. So yeah, what would you tell 15-year-old Kim now?
If you A lot of points.
Go on, let's spill them all out. Let's hear it.
We'll start with, be selective with the shits you give.
Okay. Explain. I like that. Explain that one for us.
I'd tell them to give an awful lot less shits about most things, and then pick the things you do care about and be quite selective with them.
Okay. So, because we chatted, is this around school or past school? Work?
All the above. School especially, but just generally how you perceive people to be viewing you is generally not actually how they're viewing you. And it's just all in your head.
That's Danny touched on that slightly in the last podcast, saying something along the lines of, when you're 20, you're worried what everyone thinks. When you're 40, you stop caring what everyone thinks. When you're 60, you realise that no one cared in the first place.
Yeah.
Something along those lines anyway. It's just, the sooner you can realise that, I did hear that quote and thought, I'm 22 and I've realised this, but you do hope some people don't reach 60 and still may have it then.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah.
So that would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't waste a minute. Time is the most precious thing out there in terms of gifts. Don't invest your time badly. Don't go chasing people. Don't go chasing things. Chase experiences, I would say.
That's good. Chase experiences, not people. Okay. That's deep. 15-year-old Kim, I hope he'd appreciate that.
Everyone has a story.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be judging books by the covers.
That's a huge one, especially for someone listening in school, or any young person really. Yeah,
you don't know what someone's dealing with personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to be in quite a shit position yourself to go, actually, you don't appreciate what someone else might be going through.
Yeah,
that's why they might be reacting the way they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just knowing that. Danny touched on that again. He's coughing up again here now. But yeah, just being respectful of people's feelings and knowing that there's always stuff going on is such a big thing. Obviously, can be lacked in schools, I guess, but I suppose it comes with that emotional maturity, I guess.
Certainly.
But it's the sooner you can promote this in young people and promote them to understand, I guess it will have a huge effect on how we deal with each other as young adults, and obviously down the line as well. Anything else you've got noted down there?
Yeah, I've got quite a few more. One of the guys I met in a coffee shop in Australia, we got talking very, very deep into a conversation about potential and your own potential.
Okay.
And he hit the nail on the head for me. The only limits to our potential are created by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I would say. So if you believe and you want something enough, you'll find a way of doing it. If not, you'll find an excuse not to do it.
And just bearing that in mind always. Yeah. Quote that again for us, just so we can hear that again.
I'd say our only limitations are ourselves.
Okay, so essentially the limits, your limits are what you put on yourselves, essentially.
Yeah, it might be in your head.
Mentally, or, well, physically,
there's always some, but mentally, they're generally created ourselves. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily actually there.
What do you think 15-year-old Kim would do with that? What action would you want him to take differently from that statement?
Potentially have gone into some form of competitive kayaking.
Okay.
Off island.
Oh, right.
Likely than not. But
recognising something like that early, and
yeah,
that's really interesting. Okay, I'm excited to see what's next now, because obviously I can't see your list. what else is in this list?
Invest in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Heavily, if it's reading, experiences, education, so that's stuff that you want to do.
So that's what. So if you advised 15-year-old Kim to do that, what would he have done? What would you, looking back, want him to do with that? So just, was that in his education? Was that in...
Education, partly. I think I took an extra year to A-levels. The first year, I was definitely not mature enough to be doing the studying or even wanting to be there. I think it was probably the last year I actually wanted to be there. And I was like, this is a bit late. I've kind of switched on too late. It is what it was. But also in the sense that don't go chasing material things too much. I was quite bad for always trying to give off an appearance of always in this T-shirt, always in this make.
Okay.
And I just completely learned from that stage, luckily. Oh, wow. Then.
See, I can't ever imagine you being like that, which is quite interesting, but I've only obviously come across you in the last year or two.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, actually. Wow. I think a lot of any young person can probably learn from that.
Very much so.
Anyone can do. Any age, really, but particularly young people.
Lastly, find a balance that works for you. So whether it being how much you're studying, how much you're exercising, how much you're reading, doing something you enjoy, something you really find relaxing. Finding that balance, and it doesn't matter if it's different to someone else. If it works for you, it works for you.
Wow, okay. Just finding that balance. So, you know, school, friendships, sport, so like everything, family.
Yeah, I get quite a lot of, up until fairly recently, I was getting a lot of grief from different people for spending so much time with my family, and it doesn't bother me. Like, I would spend more time with my family if I could.
Okay.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
People's perceptions.
Interesting. So, is that particularly your family growing up? Obviously, you went from school back into the family business. Is, you know, of your support network, is it generally your family that you'd fall back to?
Family and some very close friends, yeah. That was a bit of advice, actually, is be selective with your circle of friends.
Okay.
Quality over quantity.
Love it. So, okay, so you'd say, you know, close your circle potentially, but have
I
good,
would have done, yeah.
But have very close, and then potentially to what, communicate more with those?
Communicate more, be a bit more open, because mm-hmm. I find it's easier to shut off and block everyone out, and then you've already added an extra hurdle in there than what you needed to.
Okay. Do you think that 15-year-old Kim would have seen your life go as it has done to the point you are now? Do you think he could have predicted it in any sense?
Probably not.
What would he not have predicted?
Good question. I think lots of things that life throws at you would not predict. I probably in sixth form would have predicted I was going to go to uni.
Okay.
Up until last year, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not. Probably wouldn't have said I'd be kayaking as much as I was.
Okay.
I'm still doing that. I'd have thought I'd moved out from that, but it's what you enjoy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about all that what you enjoy. Life's for living and doing what you want to do. So, yeah, if you're enjoying something, why let go? I get that question a lot. People just, and it's just broadly, it's just exercise. And it's like, if I love something so much and I'm going to do it every day.
Absolutely.
Then why not? You know, I'm physically able. I've got a pair of legs, a pair of arms and a set of lungs that thankfully work pretty well. So why not use them?
Exactly.
Why stop? You mentioned earlier about a personal situation that was actually relatively similar to another guest we'd had.
Yeah.
And without being overly, you know, direct, what, coming to terms with these sort of experiences is something that's incredibly difficult, and grief and mourning, personally, it's not something that I've had to deal with yet, but any
person, young person of any age, doesn't actually matter, will have to come to terms with something like this at some point.
Yeah.
So everyone can learn.
Some level, yeah.
On some level, and everyone can learn about it.
They certainly can.
And I think that's like it should be a huge education point that maybe isn't touched upon as much as it should be in education, because it can rock people massively.
Hugely.
And is there anything that you would advise 15-year-old Kim on around that kind of experience and how to manage something like that that could rock the boat massively?
It comes back to I Choose Life again. It's not necessarily being in denial about how you feel, but more accept how you feel and then dealing with it. I think I was probably one of those which thought, I'm was fine, and then actually you might be all of a sudden angry or grumpy or all of a sudden really upset, and rather than actually dealing with that as an emotion, it's much easier to kind of block out or run from it or not deal with it. It's definitely hard one to deal with.
For sure. Incredibly hard to deal with. But so that would be just, accepting emotions what they are.
Precisely. Accepting the situation for what it is, accepting your emotions for how they are, and it doesn't actually, you might feel maybe embarrassed or like you shouldn't be reacting how you are, but that it's a natural reaction.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people try to push forward that you aren't your emotions.
Yeah, precisely.
Your emotions are something that's different for you, and it's especially going through something like that. It's, well, I can't comment from a personal perspective, but from other things, you know, emotions come first and thoughts and rationality come
second.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah. They certainly do.
And especially in those, in any kind of conversation, any kind of discussion where, you know, emotions like that are running high, it can be really positive. It could be negative and affect those, you know, personal relationships around you, I guess.
I think it definitely made our family closer. You just have to cherish the moments and experiences you had together, and kind of, I personally use them for then as a motivational tool for, only for when I got into a point where I was struggling with something, I'd be like, they wouldn't want you to stop now, get it completed, pretty much.
That's really powerful. That's very, very powerful. So I'm assuming that possibly came into things in your 24-hour kayak.
It certainly did. Yeah.
And then generally just day to day, I guess, or even, you know, any kind of struggle you have. Was this sort of experience one of your main motivations to want to support?
It was one of them. It wasn't the main one. Another close family member had a different experience where they were struggling, and that was the one that predominantly forwarded the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned on the challenge that I was not in a good place at the start of the year. Again, I carried kind of buried my head in the sand about that one, and then realised actually how unhappy I was. Got over that one. Most days now, you kind of get good days and bad days, but always. It's definitely realising the situation you're in is half of it, and then kind of accepting it and actually questioning why, trying to deal with that rather than going, oh, this can't happen to me, because
absolutely
happens to everyone else.
Absolutely. It's, and recognising it when you're going through something is the most difficult thing.
Certainly is.
When you come out of it, it's incredibly easy to look back and be like, yeah, I really wasn't in a good place then.
Yeah.
But the way I've thought best to describe it is just fog. It just feels like...
completely.
And it's just, it's not even that there's so much emotion, but it's just, it just feels damp. And it's just, the only way to try and describe it is incredibly difficult.
Very.
But it's as if it's, your mind is foggy and thick, and thoughts, despite there being, you know, thoughts there and emotions there, they just feel so thick and difficult to shift. And
yeah,
it just feels like this unbearable thing that just won't, this weight that just won't come off your shoulders.
I think I kind of didn't even appreciate how bad it had got until I was like, oof, wait a second, this is not me. I don't like being in bed. I don't like not exercising as much or cutting lines of communication or everything else. Yeah.
So was this, obviously, was this the first time you've been through something like that, or was it?
No, I'd say that was, yeah.
That was generally the first time. So I'd say that's incredibly powerful, that the first time you went through something like that, you were able to actually see it. Because I feel like a lot of people come through it, and in whatever way they do, they just slog it out, get through it, and then look back and go, oh wow, this wasn't good. But to recognise whilst you're in it is quite, I personally, from what I've heard from having conversations, that is like quite unique.
I think I was able to just recognise that I wasn't being myself, and I wasn't doing, it got to the stage where you're just cutting out things which you would normally jump at to try and do, or cutting lines of communication where you'd normally want to talk to that other people or your friends, whatever else, and then you're like, oh, actually this is it's gotten quite bad now.
Mm. Well, so it's actually very similar to a personal experience of mine, is having a close family member being in that situation. And it was from that sort of experience in itself and trying to come to terms with that and start communicating about it that I started to understand my own personal situation more, and it sort of, I started to educate myself predominantly around the subject, and then once you start, everything just starts to unravel, doesn't it, about, and the way you think starts to change, and the way you start to perceive other people,
it does
starts to change.
Usually your whole perception of everything does change. I found my level of gratitude and everything else has just gone through the roof recently. You just appreciate the smaller things and the day-to-day moments more.
Yeah, absolutely. And gratitude.
Yeah.
Gratitude is... That should be a podcast in itself, really.
Gratitude and kindness.
Yeah, learning to be grateful. Like, it's not a subject at school, but imagine if it was. Like,
yeah.
I made a habit of, you know, it sounds so cheesy, and it's just like, it's covered in all these, you know, Instagram quotes and self-help stuff, but it's actually just finding, if you just tell yourself three things you should be grateful for and are grateful for, like, just for example, before saying...
Before bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even first thing in the morning.
Yeah. Or like, both.
Waking up and being, you know, I've got a great set of legs, set of lungs, let's make the most of that. How grateful am I to be able to do what I do every day just because I can?
Yeah.
Like, I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful to live in a place like the Isle of Man. You know, driving up, not always on a clear morning, but on a clear morning, coming up the Braid and looking at the plains of heaven, just being like, I'm so lucky to be in this position, and, you know, finding things, anyone anywhere can find something to be grateful for.
Completely.
And if anyone can't, I feel awfully, awfully sorry for them.
I don't think people over here on the other man, unless they have left, they probably won't appreciate how easy we have got over here.
Yeah, how awesome it actually is.
It's one of those things that always irritates me, is when people say there's nothing to do. You can't actually find enough time to do all the things you want to do.
Absolutely, yeah. I was in that exact position. It took me moving across from the age of 14 up to the age of, well, I was 20 when I moved back, to actually come home and be like, wow, like this. I had this sort of fear of coming home, but to come home and this was just like the sense of gratitude and actual appreciation of what we have here was just, you know, it was just the next level. And I said to myself, the day I look at Brad ahead or be up at the round table looking at the views over down to Peel and I don't appreciate it, is the day I'll leave the Isle of Man. And it's been 2.5 years and I'm still here. I'm hoping it'll be a lot longer. But
it's funny going back to your 3 points, like in when you wake up or going to sleep, but that is one of the things I found, getting a routine back.
Okay.
That was one thing. It was a cue for me, was just I had lost all forms of any routine, and that was a major part of going back to being a bit happier again, was just creating a routine that you do and then just kind of stacking those cues on there.
Giving your day momentum.
Yeah,
it's the way I like to think of it, is, you know, it's just getting over the first couple of hurdles, and then naturally from that, good things seem to come. And that little sense of achievement as well, of being like, there's all the analogies, making your bed in the morning. I very rarely do that, by the way. But, you know, people say, get up out of bed, make your bed and get dressed. First task done. Yeah. Next task. Even if it's like for you, as you say, like a few tasks, whether that was just to get out in the kayak or do whatever you were doing.
I think there's a couple of different ways. Well, there's obviously more than that, but I think it's very easy to look at the day and go, right, I've got this to do. And rather than doing that, I've started trying to think about how many things you can actually try and cram into a day rather than how few you can actually get into a day. And it's amazing how much more time you find as soon as you put your phone down and actually get on with your own life rather than a life through social media. All of a sudden you've got an awful lot more hours left in the day.
Yeah, well, actually paying attention to your life rather than worrying what everyone else is up to.
Yeah, precisely.
And you might genuinely, if you actually crack on and do that, you might find you've got some more interesting stuff to share anyway. If you're to think of it like that.
Yeah.
Because some people won't want to put the phone down. But yeah, get busy living and you'll have stuff to share. It's the reality. Whether that's a positive message or not, I'm not sure. But yeah, I'd advise people to do that. Get busy living.
That's it. No time's guaranteed.
Yeah. Another big message. You enjoy your deep quotes, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, very much so. Brilliant.
Thank you so much for joining us again on the I'll Listen podcast. 2 episodes left of this series, so please continue to join us for the next 2 weeks to wrap up season 1. For anyone with any kind of feedback, please do take the time to get in contact with us, or anyone with any podcast guest ideas, we're always open to suggestions. As ever, please do share these episodes with the people that you feel they could add value to, as we need all the help we can get in getting the help to the people that need it most. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to have you back soon.